The PGA Tour presents the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America. Streaming live on PGATour.com. Follow us today and every day on Twitter at Golf Talk America. Now, the Golf Talk America crew.
Well, hello once again, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you today, Wednesday, May the 30th. So we're getting ready for the next stop on the PGA Tour, which, of course, is the Memorial, big tournament for, well, 120 select golfers that want to go and talk to the big man himself, Jack Nicklaus, play a little golf, very challenging golf. So we'll talk about the Memorial coming up in just a little bit. We also have Tour veteran Steve Elkington on with us to talk a little bit about his relationship with Mr. Nicklaus, as well as the Memorial and his baby, if you will, Secret Golf, and encourage everybody to go to secretgolf.com to find out more about Secret Golf. We'll tell you more about it when we have Elk on here very, very shortly. Frank Bassett joining us, as always, from the Nashville studios, and a little bit under the weather, as Frank was, as we all know, last week, was joining us from Benton Harbor, Michigan area, that he apparently, whatever they have there, I don't know if it's sycamore, it could be pecan, it could be anything. Frank is allergic to it. He's kind of feeling the after effects. But can you breathe okay, Frank? You got a respirator right there next to you?
No, I can't breathe. I had to go to the doctor yesterday. They put me in an iron lung. Are you kidding? The cherry blossoms. Beautiful. Absolutely gorgeous up there. Benton Harbor, Traverse City, that whole area. Gorgeous. Cherry blossoms do not work well with Uncle Frank. I can tell you.
You actually got a shot up there, didn't you?
I did. I went and took a steroid shot. So I was hoping I didn't have to tinkle in a cup for the tour because I was taking steroid pills and shots. And I've got muscles now, man. I've grown, you know. HGH.
Last week.
Yeah. You know? No, it was great. It was a great time and had a lot of fun. A lot of Secret golfers up there. We interacted with a lot of folks. Had Rocco on the show, as you know, last week, who's a Secret golfer with Steve Elkington's group. And had a great time at the Senior PGA Championship at Benton Harbor. Jack Nicklaus course, difficult. Then we go to Traverse City, and we play what was designed by Jack Nicklaus as his most difficult golf course to play. First day we get there, pull into Traverse City. Pro says, okay, boys, you're on number one right now. No warm-up. Go get them. Oh, my Lord. Yeah. So those new,
hello.
That new dozen Pro V1s that I had in my bag.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they tried to make a quick exit on a couple of holes. So anyway, great time, great time. But and let's get to the man. We've got the man.
Well, hang on. Thanks to Brendan Sweeney too. He was a big part of the shows last week as well from French Lick, Indiana, and French Lick Resort. So he helped out. He was with us as Fred Albers. We had a lot of good people on last week. So it was a good time. I was at the Fort Worth Invitational while you were up in Michigan. So we were kind of spread out all over the golf map, if you will. And congratulations to Justin Rose for a big win at the Fort Worth Invitational. Justin, along with a lot of other top golfers, in action this week at the Memorial Tournament presented by Nationwide, being played at Muirfield Village. Justin, actually, his reward for, I guess, winning the Fort Worth Invitational is he gets to deal with the crowds now because he's in the group with Tiger and Jason Duffner in the first couple of rounds of Memorial. And the crowds will be huge. It's good to see Tiger back in action. And Frank, and we'll get to Elk here in a second, but I'm curious, are you at all, I know you're surprised, are you shocked? Because I'm more shocked than surprised that Tiger is still doing what he's doing and healthy. It's not really about his game. He's playing fine. He's doing okay. But I really anticipated this would be just another little blip where he'd come back and then something else would happen and he'd be backed into a hospital or something else. Are you shocked I am that he's as healthy as he is? No,
not really. I mean, because he came back and he said, I'm going to follow exactly what the doctor tells me to do. He's finally got the right physician to fuse that back. No, I'm not. I'm excited about it. And what's going to be fun is, you know, the group he's playing in. I mean, last year's winner, Jason Duffner, is playing with him. And that's going to be a fun group to watch. Those three boys that's going to be a lot of crowds moving around that golf course following them.
Well, people are going to have some choices. You've got DJ, Rory, Jason Day in a group. You've got Bubba, Phil, Jordan Spieth in a group. Rose, Tiger, Duffner, Justin Thomas, Patrick Reed, Ricky Fowler. They've got the superstars all kind of lined up in there, and it's a great, great field. And that leads me to a question that I've been wanting to ask to Steve Elkington, who joins us now. Of course, Steve, the founder of Secret Golf. Big-time winner on the PGA Tour, multiple winner on the PGA Tour, PGA champion. I could go on and on.
two players' championships, too. 91-97. Yeah. Big time.
Yep, exactly right. Exactly right. Steve, how you doing today? Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Tim and Frank. I don't think, though, I ever won on a Jack Nicklaus course, though. I think, and he's my idol, and there was a lot of talk there in the preliminary of Frank at the PGA last week, and then you went and played that Traverse City. That was one of Jack's hardest courses. Is that true?
Yes.
Is it after you played it? Where is that exactly?
Oh, it's, well, the owner, when it was designed in 1986, the owner went to Jack and said, look, I want you to design the most difficult golf course you can possibly design for me. And Jack said, I really don't think you want me to do that for this resort. He said, no. Understand, I'm writing the check. Do it. So Jack did it. And it is, the greens are the protection, really. And, you know, you have to hit it in the proper quadrant or you're three or four putt away from, you know, death. So, yeah, it's tough. Now, it's a playable course, Elk, from the, you know, resort tees, if you will, the member tees, the forward tees. You back up where you guys play it from. Oh, my Lord. I would venture to say that a double digit, a 10 handicap, couldn't break 100 on that course.
Wow.
Well,
wow.
Jack has so many, you know, great courses. None better than this one that he's playing this week, Memorial. He, you know, the thing about him is he keeps tinkering. You know, it's the same thing we saw with Arnold Palmer. Every year we'd go back to Bay Hill or we'd come back to Muirfield and Jack had done a little tweak here or there. He'd flattened a green here or he'd add a pin placement there. Of course, Muirfield is named after where he won the British Open over in Muirfield, Scotland. He just remember one year, not too many years ago, he decided that he was going to try furrowed rakes in the bunker. Do you remember that? Where he replaced the standard rake with these ones with the big teeth, and when you raked it, it literally left a groove so that when the players hit it in the bunker, it was just going to bury to the bottom, or it could sit up on top like an ice cream.
That didn't go over
too well with the players.
Yeah. Oh, that's difficult. You know, interestingly enough, you say that. While I was up there, I played a great golf course. I mean, a fabulous private club up in northern Michigan in the northern tier that had those same rakes. It's called the Kingsley Club. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not. But
no, I've never heard of the Kingsley.
Woo, it was tough. Well, and they had those rakes, and it made grooves into the bunkers.
But you know what the caddies figured out is unless you made one with those kind of teeth on both sides, they would just flip it over and smooth it with the other side of it so that their players would be like, I don't want to see those cornrows, like you're planting crops in the sand bunkers.
A good caddy, of course, never has a bad – you never get a bad lie from a good caddy, right?
No. They always figure out a way they with their feet.
Until after the round.
Hey, Elf, here's what – when I was talking about those featured groups, if you will, back in your day when you were playing in your prime and winning a lot of tournaments and competing in majors, was the tour the same way? Did they put the best name, the big name guys all together, or did they spread you out more?
Well, that's a good question. There's a rhyme and reason the way they do that. They used to have a pairing in 1990 till about 1996 called a 1A pairing. And 1A pairing meant that all major champions were paired together. Then they had a pairing, what was called a 1 pairing, which was all past winners from the last 2 years would be paired in the same group. And then they had a pairing 2, which was the guys who were all exempt. They all played together, and then 3 was the guys that four-spotted or qualified. So it was, and what they did was they put the 1s and the 1As in the middle of the field where they knew that the most TV coverage was, and they padded that with the 2s, and then they padded that with the 3s. So if you were a four-spotter or a guy that was a, you know, local pro getting in, you know, you were a 650 and a 230, you know. So there is a bit of a rhyme or reason the way these things go about.
Yeah, it is interesting, and it'll be tough for the people at Memorial, tough in a good way, to choose who they want to see because you got the big bombers, you've obviously got Tiger, you got Spieth, and Bubba and Phil. I mean, it's a lot of entertainment for this tournament. You said before, Steve, that you've never won on a Jack course, and the Memorial itself was you said you had maybe one good finish at Memorial. Was there a reason for that?
I think I finished second once. Going back to that 1A pairing, I finished up getting paired with John Daly and Corey Pavin, who both won in 95 with me, and Crenshaw. And whenever I got paired with Pavin and Daly, I was literally like playing by myself. Pavin was 50 yards behind me, and Daly was 50 yards ahead of me. And I was like playing in a onesome in the event. You know, the funny thing about Jack's course is there's a sort of a talking point on tour, when the, you know, of course I know that it's a little wet up there right now, but when the greens get firm and everything, the only way in, the old verbiage on Nicklaus courses was you had to hit the ball with your second shot, a high fade like Jack. So one year I went up there and I said, you know what, I'm going to play this tournament. I'm going to play the course like Jack, you know, high fade. Every shot that I was going to hit that week was going to be a high fade. And I was on the range on a Wednesday, and Jack was working on his game behind me. No reason why I wasn't going over there to watch him out of the corner of my eye while I was doing it. But he was working with Jim Flick and his great longtime coach. And he turned to me and came over and looked at my swing. And I'd never been so nervous. He stood there and watched me hit a couple shots. And he goes, you're going to do well this week with that shot. I was practicing the high fade. And I finished up, I think finished second or third in the event. And that was, I did not really contend, if you will, at Muirfield. But, I enjoyed myself. It's a hard course. Look, there's events on the tour that are better than others. And I don't have any worry saying that. And Muirfield is right at the top of the list. It sits right under the big five, four majors in place.
Wow.
Yeah, I think most of you probably would agree with that. We're talking with Steve Elkington, major PGA champion and the Players' Champion, and won multiple times on the PGA Tour. And you mentioned the fact that Muirfield Village, sometimes in Dublin, Ohio, just outside of Columbus, where, of course, Jack went to Ohio State, is sometimes hampered with a little bit of bad weather. And I'm curious, not sure if I know the answer, is there a reason that there's bad weather, that it rains quite often when they play the Memorial?
I honestly can't believe that you guys don't know the story of Chief Leatherlips.
That sounds like an old girlfriend. I don't know. Tell us about it.
And Chief Leatherlips, when Jack built the course at Muirfield Village, Chief Leatherlips' gravesite was on that property, and they told Jack, do not put the driving range over the top of Chief Leatherlips' grave. And he wanted to move it, and et cetera, et cetera. And it finished up that he was going to be cursed with his event for the next 100 years. And if you go to Secret Golf on Twitter, you can actually see a tune that we celebrated that, where Jack's given an offering to Chief Leatherlips' grave. And Barbara Nicklaus over the years has offered beads, and she's done all sorts of fruit baskets and other things to present to Chief Leatherlips' gravesite. But hey, the curse is in, is what I hear.
So is there a marking out there on the range?
No, I think he put it over the top of it. That's the curse.
Nice. Nice. Oh, so Indian burial ground. Indian burial ground. Nice, Jack. Good Lord.
Barbara told him not to do that, Frank and Tim.
Jack. Oh my God.
Got a mind of his own.
Never knew that. That's a great story. We'll have to look into that.
Hey, Elk, I'm curious, too. You talk reverently about Jack Nicklaus, as almost all golfers do, and rightfully so. But you, growing up in New South Wales, Australia, and in a time when we didn't have the internet, and you didn't have a lot of other advances that we have today, how did you come to, certainly you would fall in love with golf on your own, or even an Australian star golfer would be. How did you get to come and know and, if you will, idolize Jack Nicklaus in such a faraway place from where he was playing?
Well, it's a good question. We didn't have TV. We didn't have phones. So all we had was a radio. And 1976, Jack Nicklaus had put his name down to come over to play in the Australian Open. And as kids, my brother and I and a couple other juniors out in Wagga Wagga, Australia, we bought train tickets to go down to watch the Australian Open. Actually, we pre-volunteered to go be at the Australian Open at Jack Nicklaus's course called the Australian. And before we were about to leave to go down there, we heard on the radio that Jack was at the Barrier Reef, and he had hooked a 1,480-pound black marlin, and he fought it for like 7 hours, and he had strained all the muscles in his back, and he didn't know if he was going to be able to play the Australian Open. And we were devastated, but we thought, you know what, we're going to go. We bought these tickets. We'd saved up. You know, it's a 17-hour train trip from where we lived in Australia to get down to Sydney. Anyway, long story short, and Jack, this is one of his favorite stories because I saw him recently and we were talking about it. Mate, he came to the Australian Open. He came to play. He topped his first tee shot off the first tee at the Australian in 76. A And of course, he went on to win by six strokes, I think, for his sixth Australian Open. But that 1,480-pound mile, and if you ever get lucky enough to have a chance to talk to Jack Nicklaus, he will be more than happy to tell you about that wrestle that he had with that rascal. And it sits right in his home right now in Florida, and he is most proud of it, as he well should be.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a big fish.
But to finish the story there, sorry, I met him on the driving range. I shook his hand. I got to deliver the balls to him each day, and he said to me, you look like a golfer. Now, looking back at it, and I was probably 16, 15, how would he know I look like a golfer other than my outfit and being on the range? But thinking back, Jack must have been young, right? 37, somewhere in there, not that old, but he always seemed older to me, of course, because he was my hero. But anyway, so Jack was my guy. You know, we copied his swing by the pitches. And, of course, back then we had a lot more leg dip and a higher finish. And, of course, Tiger came along. And now my son, you know, they all spin their hips a lot differently and so on. But it's interesting to me how the generations are, are influenced by the swingers of the great at the top.
Elk, we have this week, this tournament, of course, Duffner, who we've talked about previously, winner last year, is one of the fellows on the secret golf team, one of the secret golfers. You got a lot of players that are out there as secret golfers. What are you looking for from Duffner, and have you had any phone calls? Don't say any names. But I know that a lot of your secret golfers will call you and ask you for advice before tournaments and during tournaments.
They do, and we talk, and, you know, I think it's an advantage to have someone that's played. Like when I was growing up, you know, I was mentored by Jackie Burke, and, you know, most of the players that talk to me about golf, you know, it gets too complicated. So my deal is always to make it simpler for them. I reminded Jason Duffner, who missed the cut at Colonial last week, that he missed the cut there last year as well, but went up to Muirfield and shot a record 14 under through two rounds at Memorial, and Jack was not too happy about 14 under for two rounds at his course. I'm looking at the list right now. We've got a good group. Leishman, Andrew Landry's playing good. Kokrak, Russell Knox, Duffner, Perez, Martin Piller. So we've got probably about eight guys playing this week up there. And mate, we've had 14 wins in the last 12 months. So
strong.
We're doing something right. Yeah, it's going well.
Absolutely strong. We had a lot of players, Tim, at the Players Championship. Elk picked up the phone and called some of his players, and to a man, they all came over to the Golf Talk America set and jumped on the microphones with Noxie and I, Diane Knox, who is part of the Secret Golf team. Russell Knox's sister, by the way.
Steve, tell people more about Secret Golf, like what it's all about, what you can get out of it, where they can go to find it.
Yeah, well, Secret Golf is something that I, you know, had in mind when I was on the tour. It's player-owned digital channel. So what it enables the players to do is we were able to film all their content, everything they know about their swing and everything, and we were able to, you know, develop their own personal channel. You can go on and see all of those, everything they know, but more importantly, as the Internet's become, you know, more relevant to golf, now we're able to share that with the consumer. So, for example, if you were worried about your tee ball, which it sounds like you were up at Jack's course the other day.
Oh yeah,
you could go right there and just, you know, through curation that we've done on the internet, you can go to the search and find exactly the driver swing that you need for your handicap. It's, you know, we're focused over here at Secret Golf getting the right piece of information to the right golfer at the right time. For so long, golfers are so frustrated with being told they're going to get 20 yards more and this, and they've been spoon-fed, and they've been slapped over the head with do this, do that, do that. But really, hey, take the content into your own hands. Go and find the piece of information that you need for yourself right now. That's Secret Golf.
Well, you know, that's so interesting, Elk, because in the past, years past, as I was growing up as a young guy, young lad playing golf, I would have Golf Digest, and I would open it up to the playing lessons right in the middle, and it's, you know, one size fits all. That's not Secret Golf.
No, it's, you know, the internet, as you know now, is very customized, very personalized. For example, if you're a, you know, if you're a chef, you know, and you're a vegetarian, you only want to see what's for you. So we believe that personalization is the way to go for golf instruction. And we believe that, just like the internet does, for example, you know, there's great scholars all over the world that study history, guys from Oxford and Harvard and Yale and all these places. They're putting groups together, and you should subscribe and go take history lessons on course. Stuff you would never be able to get the information from ever before. Well, we're doing the same thing. We get all this information from the tour players, get that information out of them so that the consumer can get in there and dig into what they need.
Yeah, and Tim, not only PGA Tour players, but LPGA players, and that's
and coaches.
And coaches and PGA champions, PGA Tour champions. So
Jackie Burke, of course.
Oh my gosh.
Our mentor of all 95-year-olds. His videos are still the most popular of anyone on our platform.
Oh, he's incredible! I love those videos. I'll be in Houston sometime soon. I'm dying to meet that man. Never met him. Love to meet him.
That's done deal.
Yeah.
We're joined again by Steve Elkington, inventor, if you will, and founder of Secret Golf, as well as being a tour veteran for a long, long time. Let's get back, if I can, Elkin, ask you about Memorial Tournament. We mentioned all the big names that are playing in that. And right at the top of the list is Tiger. And yet Tiger hasn't won, as we all know, in a number of years now. And yet you watch any tournament that he's in, the attendance goes up, the ratings go up, the camera is always on Tiger wherever he happens to be in the tournament. He's in contention. He's 20 shots back. Is that good for golf, or does golf need to try to wean itself off of Tiger? Because at some point, Tiger won't be Tiger anymore, right? Everybody gets a little bit older, and there certainly are new, young, great golfers. Or is that just the nature of the beast? If you ride that horse until it drops, you stay with Tiger, and everybody wants to watch Tiger, so that's what you give them when you watch golf. And maybe you don't get some of the shots of some of the other guys, but you get a lot of Tiger. Is that okay for golf, do you think?
Yeah, I think going back to the opening where you talked about his back, and so I think finally he got a good surgery. I think he may have had, we'll never know, but I think he might have had a few bad surgeries, and now he finally got it fixed, and then it all knitted back together. And of course, one of the most interesting things is that's happening right now in my mind is, you know, Jack said it yesterday in his press conference, Jack Nicklaus, that is, said that while Tiger was away, a lot of other young players came along and they learned how to win. Boom, end of sentence. Now, then he said, Tiger can still break my record, but he has to relearn how to win. Boom, end of that sentence. So I've sort of always hanged my hat on Jack, but the interesting dynamic to me is, and I think I speak for a lot of people on that watch golf, is can Tiger recapture some of the magic that he had before, the lightning in the bottle, which he was able to do it on call, and can the other guys match him? I think everyone wants to see the lightning in the bottle, and then they want to see if any of these young guys can sustain that against him.
You know, interestingly enough, also in Jack's press conference, he said, I would not be surprised if Tiger Woods wins this tournament this week.
Well, yes. I mean, Jack, no one knows better than Jack. The course is soft, so that helps Tiger off the tee. We all know that he's been inconsistent off the tee. He's been a little inconsistent with the flat stick, but he has so much experience on that course. And, you know, Muirfield is no pushover. You know, we see a lot of good scores. Duffner, for example, had 1,400 in 2 days there last year. But Muirfield, to me, is a bit of a beast, particularly when it dries out and it gets windy, which is supposed to be windy later in the week. So, you know, they're all up there. All the good players are playing.
Yeah. And this week, too, as you well know, because you have Secret Golf has LPGA players, the Women's U.S. Open down at Shoal Creek is underwater this week. Of course, we're just north of it in Nashville. We're getting the remnants of that massive storm, that subtropical storm that was really brutal. But Shoal Creek's been closed for 2 days. And basically, no play.
Yeah.
They're hand-picking the balls off the range. No pickers.
Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, I've watched the LPGA every week, and they've been plagued with bad weather for the last 3 weeks. They've just been under rain delay. Brittany Lynchcombe comes to mind at Shoal Creek. She's a long hitter. She won early in the year. She's been playing well, 10th last week. Stacey Lewis is pregnant, which is awesome, but she finished 7th last week. So we've got Gabby Lopez and Brittany Lang. So, mate, we're loaded over there too. But Shoal Creek is also a bit of a beast. I don't know if the ladies have been there before, but I know the Champions Tour was just there. I played the course. It's a superb course. Shame that it's wet, but there's a lot of long shots that have to go across water over there. It's not going to be an easy week for the ladies.
No, it's going to be tough there, and it being that wet is really going to make it tougher. The of course, the PGA Tour Champions moved, the region's tradition moved from Shoal Creek to Greystone across the street or down the street. But last time I was down there, it was at Shoal Creek, and I played Shoal Creek. It's a bit of a beast. It's a tough golf course.
Yeah.
So there you go, Tim.
Hey, Elkham,
it's all about you now.
I'm curious about the your days at Houston. You won, was it two or three national championships?
Three national championships at Houston, yep.
And the tournament's going on right now, the NCAA Men's Division I Finals, and it's down to two schools. I'm sorry to say neither of them are Houston, but Alabama and OSU playing in the finals, not a big surprise. Do you keep up with college golf still? And I was looking at the rankings actually a couple of days ago. Houston wasn't in the top 25 at least. Ole Miss, by the way, Frank, got some votes. So Ole Miss has got a pretty good golf program as well. Can you keep up with college golf?
Steve.
Oh, absolutely. My son plays on the team at University of Houston, and they didn't qualify, which was a big disappointment for our team this year. They've been a little bit underachieving when they're playing in tournament golf. But, yes, I've been watching the NCAAs all week, and the best swinger I've seen on the whole get-up was the gal that won birdie the last hole to win the ladies' national championship, the gal from Arizona. She looks to me as a super player. But of course, the young fellas are—they're doing well at Alabama versus OSU. Yeah, it's going to be a great match today. I don't have any dog in any of that fight. I mean, OSU was our big rivalry. We had playing against Verplank and Tommy Moore, Tracy Phillips, Bob Tway—all they were all the guns over there. And Andy Dillard, all those guys were great players. And we got their number, mate, for three out of the 4 years. So we used to tell them we got tired of beating them over there. So.
But you know, the golf course they're playing too is a tough little beast. And 18, which is a drivable, or not a drivable, but it's a par five you can get on in two. That's gonna be a turning point, I think, this week or today.
I like that for the last hole because I've seen a lot of drama so far there. Right, there's guys that have knocked it on in two. I saw one of the boys hook it into water. Actually, Ginn, the number one player in the world from Texas, got beat by a guy from Duke, and I think he was in trouble in 18, and the other kid hit it on the green in two, and two-putted and won that hole and beat Ginn, so that was a feather in his cap.
And supposedly no wind today, which is kind of a shocker for that course.
Well, big advantage for OSU, obviously, too, playing it at home, and a course that they're very, very familiar with. But I'm curious, too, Frank, when we were talking about that, Ole Miss got a few votes out of it. What happened? Ole Miss had the individual champion like 2 years ago. Am I right on that? Who had a very homemade swing?
Yes, very homemade
Tidwell
swing.
Or something. I can't remember. Treadwell or something like that. I can't remember his name. Whatever happened with any idea where he's at now?
I've not kept up with him. I don't know if Elk has either. But I'll check that out, and we'll give you an update on the next show.
He has a weird backswing. He doesn't have a weird downswing, though. He gets it in the slot, which is I tell people all the time, let's not get too confused about the backswing. Let's see where it is when you talk about Furyk or any of these guys. Let's look where it is when it's entering, you know, when it's getting in the zone there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, came out of nowhere, Frank, so there's your Ole Miss legacy.
Well, there you go. Got to get a little Ole Miss in.
He might be the next guy, you know, just like at the Byron Nelson, young guy out of, was it Oregon? Oregon State, that won the national title a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And suddenly now there's another great young golfer on the tour. When you were playing Elk, were there a constant, because it seems like it now, maybe I'm being a bit short-sighted, a wave of new players that just keep coming and coming. And if you're a 30-year-old or 32-year-old, it's like you're looking over your shoulder constantly at another, oh, my God, there's a 19-year-old from Spain. There's another college guy that just got out. He's 21. Was it the same way back when you were playing that the golfers kept getting better?
They're coming. They're coming. They're never going to stop now. They're getting a little younger. When I came through, you know, there was a lot of players that finished up playing on the tour for a long time. When I think of Billy Ray Brown was on my team. We had, Mark Brooks was over there. Brandel Chamblee was at Texas. We had, we had Davis Love coming out of North Carolina. We had, I mean, it was just on and on. Jay Delsing, Corey Pavin, you know, there was just a ton of guys, John Cook, Joey Sindelar, all these guys coming out of Ohio State. And they played, you know, the tour for, let's say, 20 years, 10 plus, you know, a decade or more. So longevity always wins the game on the tour. You know, you can get out there when you're young, but, you know, it takes 150 career cuts to get your retirement plan, which is a little known fact anymore, but it was a very important sort of milestone. And when you think of 150 cuts, you're talking about 15 cuts a year for 10 years, Frank and Tim. That's a lot of cuts, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So we used to say, well, how many cuts you got? And they'd say, oh, I got 42, you know, and well, you talk. Come back and talk to me when you get to 150, and then we'll know that you can stay out here. You know what I'm saying?
So is the money such now, Elk, that it's not – I mean, you're right. People don't know that number and don't really talk about it very much. Is that because guys miss cuts way more now? I mean, Tiger went through a phase where he didn't miss a cut for years and years, and now you see Rory or Spieth or Justin – those guys will miss five cuts a year, and it doesn't seem like it's a big deal. Is it just because the money – I mean, that number you're talking about – and getting the pension and all that stuff isn't quite what it
used
to be.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think I'm in two minds about that. They're not thinking about retirement ever. They've got so much money now, and that's cool. I love it. But we were, and that was a different era. But I also played some weeks myself where I went for broke and didn't care if I missed a cut. So I think they play for broke a little bit more than we used to. I think the first goal always was to make the cut and be in the money line, as we used to say. Somewhere in the money line is what we would say. You know, you'd walk in the locker room on a Friday afternoon, you'd either see guys there having a beer because they made it or a beer because they missed. And you'd say, what'd you do? And they say, oh, I'm in the money line. All right, way to go. You know, that kind of talk. So it's a lot different now, and that's cool. But I tell Jason Duffner, I said, mate, you show up, you make $100,000 every week. I mean, you've got the greatest job in the world. He goes, I know. It's great. I love my job.
I remember back when I was, you know, living down in Ponte Vedra, there was a guy named Tom Kite who week in and week out was consistently in the money, but he just didn't win anything forever, and he was just knocking it out of the park for a long time, and then, of course, he broke through and won the Players' Championship that one year. It's a lot of money just to make the cut these days on the PGA Tour.
So to blow out that thought on the retirement plan, just one more thing is that once you make a cut, you know, you make your cuts, and at the end of the year, the tour puts in an amount that goes into the retirement plan. That's divide that. Let's say that number is $10 million. Let's say, for example, just for a round number, and it's divided by the amount of total cuts by the whole tour. And once that's totaled, it'll come out with $5,000 or $5,000 per cut, or $4,000 or $3,000, whatever it is. Now, each cut you make per year, you're allocated that amount. So let's say that they put that much in the account and it was a $5,000 deal and you made 15 cuts, then it'd be 15 times 5 would go into your account for that year. Now, if you made a 16th cut, it's double. So once you got to 15, guys, a lot of guys were going for, you know, even if you made the cut but didn't play well, you're still grinding it out on the weekend because you've got a double points situation. So you might... If you finish last in the tournament, you guys, in 88 and made $2,000, you might make 10 on the 16th cut. You with me?
Gotcha. Yep. Yeah.
So that was worth it. It was worth it to us.
It was definitely worth it. Well, it's fascinating. I'm telling you, every time we talk to you, Elk, there's always something new and different that we don't know about life on the PGA Tour. So
yeah, I'm minister
go.
Of useless information, Frank. That's what my wife says to me.
It says it right there in your business card.
Well, there's going to be some more new and different things coming out, Tim, from us. I'm about to cough again. Pardon me for these allergies.
That's right.
But with Secret Golf and Golf Talk America and The Big Show, which, Steve, I want you to mention The Big Show and tell us a little bit about that also.
Well, The Big Show is a sort of a bus that I own that... When I go shoot my players, when I go to shoot a tour player, let's say, you know, Pat Perez or Stacey Lewis, we'll go to their place and we'll set up The Big Show. It's a double-decker bus, 1,200 square feet. You know, they can relax in there. It's got a putting green, a bar. It's got the whole thing. And we also can invite guests and celebrities and sponsors to come by and watch our player shoots being done. And we're going to Golf Talk America, and we're thinking about running a little live show there and inviting the local folks to come out and visit with us and, you know, get a bit more rubbing elbows, Frank. That's the move, I think, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. I think that'll be a blast and a lot of entertainment for the club members and on. Yeah.
Yep, no doubt about it.
It's going to be some fun stuff.
Yep.
Well, Elk, we appreciate your time. Thanks so much for being with us. And I know you're always, always busy. Where are you going next? You got any big plans? Any trip?
You know, I'm
going
to be in New York next week. I may go up to the U.S. Open. Last thing before I go, we have this really cool thing that I want people to go and check out. I did a cartoon with our cartoonist last year when Duffner won the Memorial Tournament, and we have two cartoons that we're giving away this week. Simple contest. Go to Secret Golf and check it out. But they're signed by Duffner and Jack Nicklaus, and there's only five in the world. And Frank, I know you want to enter this contest. Tim, you will too. I know it's it's a very cool, very rare. There's only five. I got one. I got two. Jason's got one, and Nicklaus has one. So it's a very, very rare tune. At least go on and have a look at the tune. It's cool.
Enter under an assumed name, Tim. You're ineligible under Tim Matthews. So,
how did Frank and I get into the cartoon on your website? Because your cartoonist, am I right?
It's awesome.
Calder Chisholm?
I discovered Calder, turned him into a tunist, and he and I collaborate on tunes. I'll do you guys one. How about that?
Hey, that'd be
fun. That would be awesome.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah.
We'll send you some pictures. So, because I know he makes everybody look more handsome, I noticed that...
I can do whatever I want to do.
Exaggerated. Yeah, I was going to say
that's scary. That's scary.
Yeah, you've got all the guys. You got Perez there as a cowboy. I can't see who he's with. Is that with
that's
you?
Hilarious.
Is that you and Perez?
Well, we did a show. We did a show in Oklahoma where we went out and tried to herd cattle, and that was pretty hilarious show at Shangri-La in Oklahoma. So, you know, we're having a lot of fun over here.
Pat Perez herding cattle is like us fishing with dynamite, okay?
Exactly.
I mean, oh, my God.
Talk about fish out of water.
Good Lord.
Seriously. Yeah. All right, Al, we appreciate it. Again, thanks so much, and we'll be talking to you again real soon.
Thanks. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, buddy. See
you. Take care. Steve Elkington. Yeah, check it out, secretgolf.com.
It's cool.
And, I was just looking at the cartoon page. I mean, they do a great job. I mean, he'll make us look a little funny, Frank, but that's okay.
That's okay.
Funny, so that's all right.
I've made myself look a little stupid and funny doing our live show out on the road sometimes.
I look a little funny all the time anyway.
He made Diane look great, though. Noxie's, she looks great in her little cartoon.
Yeah. You notice? Yeah, he makes the men look goofy. And
Noxie's
makes the women beautiful. Yeah. What's up with that?
Yeah, Noxie's, she's a beautiful young lady and a sweetheart, and her brother's a pretty good player. I love his commercial. Okay, the Skechers commercial where they have the fan blowing on Russell, and it's about to blow him away, but the shoes are keeping him on the ground, you know?
Yep.
Funny commercial. Russell, by the way, the other day, before we get out of here, stopped and gave a little boy his golf ball in the middle of his round. And you know what? Just seeing that and knowing Russell and knowing Diane and the family, the parents, that's a sweetheart of a deal, you know. They got to do more of that. More players need to do that, and they are. They're starting to do it more. That's important on the PGA Tour.
I'm excited about the Memorial. It starts again tomorrow and on Thursday, so be sure to tune back in here to Golf Talk America. We'll talk more about the first couple of rounds and how they're doing, how Tiger is doing. There are big gaps sometimes between Tiger's play, and we haven't seen him in quite a few weeks. But back in action, of course, we'll anticipate seeing him and everybody else in Shinnecock, and of course we'll have Bob Bubka on with us.
He will be back
into Shinnecock as well because he's
live from Shinnecock.
He's from there. He lived there. Yeah, he knows it like the back of his hand. He stuck on there as a kid.
Can't tell by that southern accent of his, can you?
No, you can't tell. Yeah. You can't tell.
And I'll be appearing in the respiratory wing of Vanderbilt Hospital. God.
In about 2 hours from now.
Oh, my Lord. I'm glad my insurance is really good because these allergies are tough. And being a golfer, here's one of the things that we will recommend to all of our listeners out there. Do not pick up your golf ball off the green and then lick it to get the grass off of it. Don't do that.
Not a good idea.
Not a good idea. And people do it all the time. You see them do it all the time. Well, and then they wipe their face with their hand after they've picked up grass and thrown it in the air. And then they start sneezing.
Is lick your thumb and then wipe the ball with your thumb. How about that? You don't have to actually put your tongue
on
the ball.
But do you wash your thumb before you do that a second time? No.
Yeah, well,
so,
second time, maybe.
You know, here, just throw the ball to your caddy. You know, I have caddies. Don't you have caddies, too?
Yeah, no, Frank. I don't think that's going to really ring true with most of the people listening.
I don't either. I'm lying. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah.
Of course.
A caddy.
Anyway.
So, anyway, it should be fun. By the way, Bubba Watson, I don't know if you saw this a couple nights ago, threw the opening pitch at a Cubs game.
I saw that.
Bubba at Wrigley Field. Had a little bit of fun there, too. So, PGA Tour is everywhere. And we want to thank you guys for being everywhere that we are when we go on the road. And we'll give you an update on our events that we're going to be at here coming up shortly. Thanks for listening, as always. Thank you, once again, Steve Elkington. Again, secretgolf.com is the website to go to. For Frank Bassett, I'm Tim Matthews. Thanks for being with us here on Golf Talk America. Join us next time, and we will see you then.